You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius, XMC Channel 85. I'm with David Goss. I am Andrew Wiebe. We are in the green room hanging out here on this Friday. We know the schedule's gotten a little bit wonky for you who download the podcast on iTunes. That's just part and parcel of these 2017 Audi MLS Cup playoffs. The games are at times that, Dave, I'm not normally accustomed to. The Mondays, the Tuesdays, the Thursdays. But finally, we have goals and we have so much to talk about. The first of the conference finalists is set. The Seattle Sounders have gone through 2-0 winners at home against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Of course, three more to go. Toronto FC, New York Red Bulls, NYCFC, Columbus, Portland, Houston. All those go down on Sunday. They start at 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Another game on ESPN, another game on FS1, and all of them right here on Sirius XMFC Channel 85.
I'll be in Toronto.
You'll be in Toronto? Yeah. You just said, come confident with that, Let people know.
Well, it doesn't matter how I say it. I'm physically going to be in the city either way.
Gotcha. Okay.
Going to an Arcade Fire concert on Saturday
night
at Air Canada Center.
Wow.
Most Canadian thing you
could do. I didn't peg you for that. That
wasn't my decision.
I was going to say, it feels a little bit like shading.
It wasn't my decision.
It was a little too Brooklyn for you.
Yeah. Wasn't my decision, but down for it. And then I'll be at the game on Sunday, which I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah.
Because it's like a month earlier than Cup, so it'll be a little bit warmer. It's a day game, so it's going to be nice. And that place gets nuts.
Yeah, it does. BMO Field really has developed into quite the home field advantage for Toronto FC. Trying to win an MLS Cup there this year if they can. Let's start with the Western Conference. We'll get to the East. We'll get to NYCFC and Columbus because Crew SC continue to be the darlings of this postseason, both on the field and off, I think. They really took it to New York City FC, and this might be the second year in a row that Patrick Vieira
and David
Villa.
Oh, we did the show before that game.
We did, yeah.
Oh, man.
I know. You thought – no. We're going to have to talk about that 4-1. Let's start with the obvious and the immediate, though. Vancouver, 0-0 at home, didn't really try to come out of their shell and try to play at all, really, at BC Place. And Seattle Sounders, for obvious reasons, with injuries and – suspensions and the like, just kind of said, okay, we'll hold off as well. If we get one on the break in Vancouver, all good. You go back to Central Link Field and you're thinking, okay, like this is Carl Robinson saying, this is what I played for. I wanted to bring it to this second leg. I didn't want to have something like what happened to Patrick Vieira happen where all of a sudden you're just like, you went for it and you got punched in the mouth and now the aggregate score is such that you're pretty much down and out. You got to the second leg, but they still didn't have it. Jordy Reyna comes back into the lineup. Christian Teixeira comes back into the lineup.
Shocking. I didn't even
think
they were going to
play. Yeah, I know, man. They were so hurt, Who knows?
Shocking discovery that they were capable of playing.
Capable of playing 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And once again, they didn't come out of their shell.
Yeah.
And they weren't able to create chances. And they had a couple half looks by virtue of really what was the only kind of like attacking strategy of the night for the Vancouver Whitecaps, which was get it wide, ideally to De Jong. Let him hit that ball over the top to Freddie Montero. Hopefully Roman Torres gets caught out or maybe Chad Marshall. Ball falls in. He takes a good touch and he puts one on frame. Well, they just got one shot on frame. That was Bolaños. And that means over 180 minutes, they just had one shot on goal. We'll get to the Vancouver Whitecaps in just a second. Seattle Sounders play Possum in the first leg.
They also had no game plan in the second leg.
Correct.
They also did the exact same thing as Vancouver did.
That's the complaint with Seattle Sounders, too.
Yeah.
They do not have dynamic movement in and around the box.
Except for the goal.
Except for when Clint Dempsey gets
on
the ball.
Was that a purposeful pass by Harry Shipp?
The finishing I think you can question both passes.
Which one?
I'm pretty sure Victor Rodriguez was shooting that ball, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
I don't think so. He seemed to line up. You're saying the second goal.
Yeah, I'm saying the second.
He seemed to line up the far post and play it there. But on the first one,
right,
it's a great move.
Lodeiro
plays it into space.
Right.
Roldan, the touch from Bruin. Harry Shipp trips, and his pass goes straight into the feet of Dempsey. Looked like he may have been trying to take the ball on.
Don't try to take that assist away.
Okay, I won't. And Dempsey does the right thing. He sees the entire defense shifting one way, makes the hard cut to allow the defenders to go by him, and knows that he can finish from the top of the 18 because he's that good.
Yeah.
Beautiful goal. Now, that was coming after about 85 crosses that failed and landed to nothing. And I think when you look at this team, we've talked about it all season, Dempsey coming in, it's a lot more individuality. It's a lot more, you try it. If you can't score, then I'll try it. And I think there's an element on this team of, I don't know that I'm going to get the ball back. And so guys don't rush the ball off their feet. And you see it a lot with the fullbacks and the outside wingers when Lodero or Roldan or Dempsey's an option for a quick inside slip pass to, like, keep the play moving. Jones and Leerdam and Ship, they hold it for a second or two. And then the pass is gone or the pass becomes ineffective. And I think there's an element of, it's so self-centered is the wrong term, but it's so individually based that there isn't a flow to the team. And that hurts what you're watching because there's such good quality in each player that when they do link up, yeah, you get the goal.
And look, this game, the first 56 minutes or so until Clint Dempsey's goal was, in my estimation, this is just like a rudimentary kind of like timeline here. Cross clearance, long ball, cross clearance, long ball. It was not a beautiful game. It was kind of an extension of what we saw in the first leg, yeah, only this time around Seattle pushed forward because they had the numbers and they had the personnel to do so. This is a team that I think is by far the favorites in the Western Conference, the Seattle Sounders, not because they're a juggernaut outside of that center back pairing and maybe like Roldan in front of them. And if Ozzie Alonso and Svensson are back, like their base is so good. I'm not sure that any team's going to create sustainable chances against them over and over, especially in the Western Conference. They're the favorites, but they're flawed. And they're slow to combine in the final third, and we've seen it all year long. And you're right, the ball does get stuck. But when you have Clint Dempsey and the ball gets stuck, sometimes you get two goals out of it.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes in this game.
You do against the Western Conference, and over the course of two legs, you can score goals.
So congratulations to Seattle Sounders. Like, we're not trying to bash you right now. We're just pointing out the obvious weaknesses that if you're a Sounders fan and you don't see those, I'm not sure what you're watching. We've got a couple of those in the office watching with us, and they're like, yeah, man, this is 2017 in a nutshell. This is the deal.
Yeah.
On the flip side, Vancouver Whitecaps, season over. Okay. You know, I think they overachieved this year for what their expectations were, considering the Freddie Montero thing was kind of a late arriving move, and they spent some money on that. They had to do that because otherwise I don't know how this team would have created chances throughout the course of this season. So you win your first ever playoff game, you get here, but if you're a Caps fan, you got to be looking at this and saying, over 180 minutes, I watched my team either not have the courage or the ability or the green light to come out and play soccer.
Or both or all three.
Right, in an attacking way. And even not even in an attacking way, just in a way where you were thinking, hey, we can create chances. We could do this. And we can do it in numbers. And it's not just 3-on-6. Maybe it's 4. Maybe a fullback gets forward. And the Jake Derwinski injury hurt him as well. But this is a team, Dave, I think is kind of on a precipice here. Like, if Freddie Montero doesn't come back from that loan, and he's not yet willing to commit to that because obviously he has another year in China, and he can't say right now, they don't know, it'll cost money to finish that off. If they lose Freddie Montero, I don't think there's a playoff team next year because I think the Real Salt Lakes of the world, even the Galaxies, Minnesota's, you know, those sorts of teams will make jumps. And if you look at the splits on their record this year, they were like 9-3-4 against non-playoff teams. I think 6-9-3 against playoff teams. They were 1-8-0 on the road against playoff teams. So this game in Seattle, I know that, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, the numbers say this, and like you decided on the field. But I still just don't understand the decision to sit back in the first leg when they didn't have Clint, when they didn't have Ozzie, when they didn't have Svensson, when they didn't have Victor Rodriguez. Like, that was an opportunity to steal one. That was an opportunity to, I don't know, to set yourself up for something in the second leg, because they didn't even get a set piece in the second leg.
Yeah, but I think that goes down to the ability of the team, which is it's a counterattacking team, and Seattle wasn't going to open themselves up in that first leg. And so Vancouver wasn't capable of creating chances, and so they made the decision that rather than risk trying to create something, we're going to defend and go into a scenario where Seattle does have to push forward, and then we can counterattack, because they couldn't force Seattle to open up in that first leg. And without Dempsey, I don't know that Seattle was going to, and they didn't. So they didn't have that ability. And I like Teixeira. I think he's a good player. But you look at Mosquito, you look at Bolaños, you look at Breck Shea, None of those guys can open up a team.
Bernie Abini, I'd throw in that as well.
I love Bernie Abini, though. None of those. Bernie Abini can take guys on. He had a golden cone this year. One of them.
They don't need golden cones. They need goals. And Bernie Abini had like 5 shots on goal in 1,000-plus minutes.
Those 4 guys, if you want to put them all together, don't give you one complete elite-level creative player. And so they don't have anyone right now that can break guys down. We go back to Pedro Morales, and that was his role. And then he fell off a cliff, and they still haven't filled that in. Tony Chani comes in and moves the ball really well and keeps the game moving. And
it was a shame we didn't see him in this game. I was shocked to see him.
Well,
on the bench.
Why would you not start a guy who's played 2 games ever for you in the biggest game of the year? Sorry, that was sarcastic.
Yeah, I mean, look, Carl Robinson's roster of rotations have been the source of some confusion
Alfonso
for a lot
Davies
of people for a while.
The game, which was shocking.
Which was shocking. Yeah, that was shocking as well.
He has not really played that much down the stretch. Uh-huh. I was surprised to see that was the guy that came off the bench. So they need to go out and they need to get at least one elite playmaker. And I think Jordi Reyna, if they were to bring him back, would be fine playing on one of those wings. And Teixeira would be fine playing on the other one if you keep Montero up top. But you need a number 10 in there behind them to open up play, to create something. And to be able to...
By the way, Reyna, they transferred him from Red Bull Salzburg.
Oh,
so I think he's done
and
dusted. But I'm with you. Either that creative presence, that chance creation has to come from, and whether it's in the middle of the field, and I'm not sure that's where Carl Robinson and the Caps will want to put it because they are so... like dogmatic about kind of this structure that they have and keeping it tight. Like it could be a wing player. It could be a Piatti type. It could be even a Ladero type who at his best kind of comes in from the right wing. Like, but they have to have somebody else who can create, because if you look at their stats this year, it's Freddy Montero and nobody.
And I actually think it would be less dangerous to put it at that number 10 role with this team, because you have 2 holding mids in there and you have 2 great center backs. You put it on the wing. Now you have a question mark. Can your fullback get forward? If they do, you're almost exposed more, right? Like,
right.
You look at what Montreal has done. When Piatti comes in field, you can't have – it was Iongo and then passed on to a bunch of random names. People pushing forward. So there has to be a way for them to find that creativity. Like you said, every team in the league is trying to find that guy.
Yeah.
Tomas Martinez is
not that easy
to find that guy.
Yeah.
Medunian, and I guess, or El Seno was an attempt to find that guy for Philly.
But those guys,
Lucho Acosta.
Okay, but Lucho Acosta, I'll give you. But that's because I think, and we've talked about this before, supporting Kansas City, there's coming a time here where you can't just go out and find diamonds in the rough in this league that are then going to be elite game-changing players for a top 2-3 team in a conference.
Really?
Sure. Who name
Diego Valeri?
Okay, Diego Valeri is the outlier, and he's been in this league for like 7 years.
Okay, but they still went out and found him.
Yeah, and he also cost millions of dollars
just
to acquire him.
Yeah.
So, like.
Oh, you're not going to spend $100,000.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can't go.
But were you ever?
No, I guess not. But you can't go out on the cheap and be like, oh, yeah, we'll just go find somebody. Or we'll go pick somebody up from this, like, second division. Or hey, this is a flyer that we'll take. Or in Sporting KC's of years past, we'll get guys who used to be that player, the Brad Davises of the world, and see if they can have the Justin Mapps have another good year. Like, if the Caps want to take a step forward or even maintain, I think they got to invest. I think they got to figure out where that money's going. I think they got to figure out what happens with Montero. Because another offseason of who's our center forward is just – it's deja vu for this team, and they need a little bit of consistency. Let's turn to Seattle and just look ahead for them. Because those injuries were – I mean, when you lose Svensson, when you lose Ozzie, when you lose Victor Rodriguez, who has started to make an impact for them, and you have to shuffle that lineup and move Jovan Jones forward, which, by the way, I just don't think he's very effective in that midfield role. He's so much better from outside back, because then his only job is to get forward and cross, and it's not the combination play you were talking about. They've got like 2.5 weeks now. They're straight chilling. Like, this is setting up for the Seattle Sounders perfectly to defend their MLS Cup. They got all the time in the world. They got the weaker conference to go through. The Portland Timbers are injury ravaged. Houston probably aren't at a point where they can truly challenge them and, you know, create goals and opportunities against that back line. I don't see any scenario here that doesn't have the Sounders in MLS Cup.
Well, it's MLS, and it's
playoffs,
but
sure,
anything can happen. I would agree with you that they're the favorites, but we've said that all season. Nothing's changed, except I think there's a little bit less confidence from me after coming out of this series because of their inability to change the way that they played against Vancouver and continue to bash their head against the door. And it worked in the end. But that doesn't mean it will forever, and that doesn't mean that Portland – now, Portland and Houston, you could say, maybe aren't as good defensively.
Right, that's
but they're
going
to get more than one shot on goal in 180
minutes.
Yeah,
that's true.
So I don't know that you continue to have those opportunities that are pressure-free. If Seattle had given up a goal at any point in the first 120 minutes of this series,
if they'd given up a goal at any point before Clint Dempsey scores the second,
then all of a sudden those crosses, the anxiety gets in that crowd, the team changes. We were there against Minnesota when they went down and they really got frustrated.
And then we're talking about their inability to create chances.
Yeah. So that still exists, and Nico Lodero is not that. You don't have to call him a holding player, even though he played there, but that's not his role at all. And he looked completely out of sorts, and he was completely ineffective in this game. And this was the guy who was the best player in the league last year.
But here's the thing. You mentioned those teams will create opportunities. They'll also send some numbers.
Yep.
And Vancouver never, ever did that. And Lodero is at his very, very best when he picks that ball up in the midfield, not all the way in the final third, but the ability to pick out runners, and then Seattle just streams off him. Outside backs, you know, Victor Rodriguez, whoever it is, Will Bruin running in behind, Clint Dempsey dropping into him, and then they combine from there. He didn't have any of those opportunities in this series because Vancouver was just sitting back in blocks saying, no, you're not going to have a passing angle against us. Too bad. So, you know, we'll see. I think he's going to be – I want to see better set-piece service. You know, I think that's one thing for this team with Clint, with Roman, with Marshall. They've got an opportunity there. They just haven't been taking advantage of it. And, like, Kendall Watson is on the other side, and Tim Parker and Ali G and all these guys that just are, you know, Vancouver Whitecaps are huge and are one of the best, if not the best set-piece team in the league. So it's no wonder that they've negated that. But that's something to watch out for in this series, whoever they play, Houston or Portland. Portland and Houston will take the field for the nightcap on Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1, TSN, and TVA Sports. A reminder for you, MLS Playoff Central on MLSsoccer.com, and YouTube comes at you 30 minutes before and then immediately after all these game nights. So, you know, before Toronto FC Red Bulls at 3, we'll be on at 2:30 previewing the whole thing, and then right after Portland-Houston, we'll come back and wrap it up for you. Bobby Boswell and Alan Gordon in the office last night. That is like a MLS nerd dream. These dudes just throwing it back and forth. Trash talk, deep cut MLS stories. I would tell some of them, but I feel like I would violate the, you know, there's a little, I don't know. We're going to get both of them on for MLS story time, so maybe we'll just like bring that back up with them. They're both in, they said, so be ready for that. Let's take a look at Portland-Houston because this is going to be what decides it. I hope we get goals in this one. 0-0 in the first leg as well. Some contentious penalty shouts. Darlington Nagbe with a chance that he biffed, but really not consistent chance creation in this one either. Some people put that on the field in Houston at BBVA. It is a little bit of a cabbage patch right now, and you know we've talked about the grass and what they may do with that in the future. But you go back to Portland, and you go to Portland with a lot of question marks. Seems like Nagby's going to be fine. Just a contusion for him. Mabiala, I think, is still questionable. We're not going to see Diego Chará.
Guzman's questionable. And Fernando Adi.
And Fernando Adi has just been MIA.
Sorry, Blanco is also questionable.
The burned foot, which still is just, I don't know how to explain that one. I'm sure a lot of you out there have conspiracy theories as to how that might have happened. But Caleb Porter's going to have to make do, man. He's going to have to find a way, and he's been doing it all season long, really, because they've been ravaged. But he hasn't been doing it without Diego Chará. He hasn't been doing it without the guy who I think is kind of the glue that keeps all of this together very, very quietly. Like, you don't really hear about him unless he's fouling somebody and it's going to the discipline committee or he scores, you know, he had that one big game where he scored 2 goals against Seattle, I think, and we're just like, what? Where did this come from? But he's the one that gives everybody else that freedom to go do what they want because he's going to chase you down on the break. He's going to have the foul at midfield when he needs to make it. He's going to be clean in possession. He's going to find Diego Valeri in the spots he wants to be. This is a huge loss. I'm not sure it's one that they can come back from.
Yeah.
But they have Houston on the road. So that's.
Yeah, they have Houston at home. I think, and I think I wrote about it, I think you pull Nagbe in field if he's healthy and play him in that role because Guzman is the one who's the true defensive midfielder.
For sure.
Now. In past years, Chará was the only option there. And now Chará plays alongside Guzman, who's a natural number six. So if Guzman can go and then you can bring Nagbe in field to play that role of Chará, which is cycle the ball, keep the ball moving, cover space with the ball at your feet to then help link up your back line to your front line. That's all stuff that Nagby's pretty good at, and he looked pretty dangerous when healthy against Houston in the first leg. So that's not the end of the
Guzman
world.
What if Guzman can't go?
if Guzman can't go, then you put Lawrence Olam in central midfield, and then you have a question mark. Is
maybe Imobi Okugo comes in.
Well, then that becomes, can Nagbe do enough to help a player of lower quality than Guzman? If not, then you need to play two guys in there. So then that's why you see Okugo and Lawrence Olam, because you don't trust either of them individually to be the true stopper in front of your back line, which also may have a missing piece and might have Roy Miller starting in there rather than Mabiala. So then it becomes a bit more dangerous to start Nagbe in that area. Now, Nagbe showed 2 years ago in MLS Cup that he can help that player, but he was helping Chara, who's an elite player in this league. And then on the wings, it's Aspria's athleticism that you're relying on. He brought in Ebobise later on at center forward and put Maddox on the wing. Ebobise hasn't played a lot this year, but the team has played well when he's been in there. He hasn't necessarily scored, but he seems to draw enough attention and help Valeri and Maddox coming off the wing enough to not be a minus on the team.
Yeah.
So I don't hate the idea if you pull Nagbe in field to push Maddox onto one of the wings, also onto that left wing, because you haven't gone against Jalil Alibaba.
And that's a great matchup. Don't get me wrong, but when I hear Aspria, when I hear Maddox on the wings, I'm hearing a lot of like head down running and aimless crossing.
Yep.
Like, these injuries are killing them to the point where the one piece of quality they're going to have in the final third is Diego Valeri. And that really, I mean, look, God bless him. He has dragged this team along
to
the back half of the season.
Yeah.
Like, they need him to do it now, and they need to get that international break. No team needs that break more than the Portland Timbers do.
And it might save them. It might
maybe Fernando Adi comes back. I don't know what's going on with that hamstring.
Yeah.
Like, obviously that injury was far more serious than anybody thought, because we've spent the last month and a half, 2 months saying,
being like, day to day, Fernando
Adi. Yeah, he might be back. He could be. Well, when Fernando Adi gets back, this and that could happen.
Yeah.
But I think this is a blow for them, because I think they looked at this after they got the one seed with Diego Valeri on form, MVP caliber form, and doing it without Fernando Adi, Caleb Porter and Merritt Paulson and Gavin Wilkinson and everybody in Timbers armor and everybody else in Portland had to be thinking, you know what? The West is down.
Yeah.
They'd be thinking the same thing Seattle are thinking right now.
Well, it was the same thing when you look at Vancouver, except they have Valeri in the final third. We can sit back and not give up goals against a lot of teams. We've got enough pieces to do that. And then we've got Diego Valeri to create a moment. And he will create a moment over the course of two legs. It might come down 3-0, though, now. It's probably not. Houston's probably not going to put up three. Then you look at Houston and you ask questions in terms of mentality. How is this team going to play this leg? All of those injuries to Portland, but they've been terrible on the road. Are you going to go out and attack? No. Then if you don't, then you're going to let a team that's struggling at the back be comfortable in their home stadium, a home stadium that's going to get behind them, that's going to get injured. So it's a question mark for Wilmer Cabrera of how to go about this. This isn't a team that normally dominates the ball, but they had more possession against KC, and they looked the better team in my mind in the first leg. A lot of that was down to the injuries. Do you go out and start to, you know, nudge numbers forward a little bit? Do you start Tomas Martinez a little bit deeper like he has late on in the season alongside one of Rico Clark or Eric Alexander along Cabezas, and play another attacking player like Alex or Chente in the starting lineup?
I don't think you have Chente in the starting lineup.
I know you don't.
Look, he doesn't have the legs to do it. And if you're looking at possibly 120 minutes, I want Chente like late on, possibly into PKs, more than I want him in the first 45, 50 minutes.
I want an away goal in the first 25 minutes against a team that has a ton of injuries and doesn't know who they are right now. That is the most important thing in my mind.
I don't disagree, but I think your best bet for that is to kind of lure them forward a little bit. Bet on Alvis Powell or Vitas.
Really good in the first leg.
He was.
One of the best games I've seen Alvis Powell
play. Right, because lots of times we watch Alvis Powell, we're like, ooh, what's that? What's he doing here? But if you can lure those guys forward a little bit, because they're going to have to put numbers if they want to create. And at home, it's going to be urged on, and you know it takes a lot to have that sort of like calm consideration that the Vancouver Whitecaps had, or it maybe doesn't take anything. You just know you can't do it. And try to get in behind them with Kyoto or Elise, and just see if their pace, like it did in Portland earlier this year. I know it was a 4-2 loss, but that was a game in which it was very open, and those guys had opportunities to get out and run, and they are faster. They are so much faster than anybody on that back line. And without Chara, I just don't know.
Except Powell.
Right. That's
Powell
why
kept
get
up
him
with.
Forward.
Yeah.
Pull him forward. He wants to attack.
So you would start Kyoto and Elise.
I would.
And I'm assuming one of Kubo or Mendoza.
I would probably start Kubo.
I would as well.
Because I think in this game, you want somebody that those guys can play off of. and you don't want to commit too many numbers forward. So he's the guy, more so than Manotas, who can come in back to goal, bring the ball down, and just either put it over the top or find the guy in behind who can then put it over the top.
Would you start Alex? Would you put a fourth attacking player in there and Tomas Martinez?
I don't know. I mean, maybe you don't. Maybe it's – I think it's either Alex or Tomas Martinez, right?
Or you could start both and start just Cabezas. Or you start Cabezas and Alexander, Cabezas and Rico, and one of those
two. To me, you got to have two. You got to have two in the middle. On the road, in this situation where a scoring draw gets you through and nil-nil gets you to extra time, like, why take the chance? Why if you're Wilmer Cabrera, when, and I know you're playing with house money, and I know, like, he's like, yeah, all this is, we're in a place we didn't expect to be. This is a huge step forward for our franchise. Let's just go see what happens. I still think you got to be a little bit pragmatic and also know that you have probably the, you know, the two most dynamic players in the open field in this game. And I know you look. Darren Maddux is great. Darren Esprit is great.
About Valeri.
But sure. But Valeri needs help. He's not going to run away from everybody else in the open field.
Do you see what he did to LA when Jermaine Jones decided to dive in 40 yards from goal?
Well, then he hit it from 40 yards. Yeah. Like
that's pretty dynamic.
That is pretty dynamic. That's not open field play. That's like him.
Yeah.
That's, you know, rush of blood.
I can agree with you. I just, if you're Houston, if you score the first goal in this game, it's probably over. Because Portland doesn't have the pieces to really break you down if you can sit back and protect. And I think the pressure is going to be on them if you score that first goal.
The problem is if you sit back and that's what you're doing, like, do you trust Cinderos? Did you trust Anibaba? Do you trust?
I trust Machado. I trust Beasley. I trust Cabezas. I don't know who's in goal. That's another thing.
Yeah, well, we've brushed over that. I just kind of didn't think about it. Tyler Derrick, in case you haven't been paying attention, is suspended for this game. An issue with domestic issue in Houston, and, you know, go read the news on this. We absolutely, there's one thing that you can't do. There's many things that you can't do. One of them is assault somebody, anybody, especially a woman, and it's just, we'll see. The facts have to come out. Obviously, you're not guilty until proven, but obviously we'll miss this game. So that's a big loss for them. But Willis is a good goalkeeper, got a lot of experience in MLS.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. Willis has played a lot this season for them, so that's not probably going to change a lot for this team. I understand your point, though, is how much pressure can that backline take without conceding? And they didn't really have to against KC, because KC is as good as our co-ed team on Monday nights in front of goal, and Portland had so many injuries. I mean,
Megan's friends do take a lot of, like, ill-advised shots and, you know.
And hold the ball way too long in front of goal, Ben Bear.
Yeah.
Never scores and then comes on this show every week and it's like, oh, I score five.
Got nothing. Hey, he makes the hard runs, though.
He says he creates
the opportunities. He makes the hard runs. This game's going to go down at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday on FS1, TSN, and TVA Sports. We'll know what the Western Conference Finals are. At that point, of course, the Seattle Sounders are through. 2-0 winners against the Vancouver Whitecaps.
I will say this. You mentioned Carl Robinson's rotations have been odd. Wilmer Cabrera has made a lot of moves. He has had to at times, to keep the younger guys motivated. But I wouldn't think that this lineup is going to come out and be straightforward from him in the second leg. I think there's going to be a surprise an hour out when you see that lineup for the first time.
All right, we will see. Pay attention. MLS app is where you can find those right when the lineups come out. And, of course, MLS Playoff Central will go down before and after the games on Sunday. I cannot wait. And then we got a long break with the international break coming up. Maybe another member of the ETR crew on the other side? Yeah, maybe, yeah. Eastern Conference coming up next. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Got me a postcard and a $20 bill. I told you I'd meet you.
Back on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMC Channel 85. You look confused. The new edition.
Yeah.
After the international break.
Is Ben Bear here?
No. It's Baby Wiebe. It's Cameron Russell Wiebe. It's the namesake of CCL legend Cameron Porter. Vitas. There could be an addition to the crew. I'm saying the baby will come.
Vitas Digital Takawira Wiebe?
You know what?
I'm locked
in. That sounds stupid, but it, like, also has a ring to it.
You could call him Taki or Digi.
Can't call him Taki. Taki's a snack.
Hot Cheetos and Takis.
Yeah, dude. That's what's up. All right, let's talk Eastern Conference here.
Is that a guarantee? Is this a guarantee?
What, the baby's going to come?
Yeah.
I mean, November 18th is the due date here.
Yeah.
So I don't want to guarantee it. It could, like, hold on for a couple
weeks
after.
So my birthday is in June. And on my birthday literally every year, it's either like the first or second day of Euros, World Cup, something like that.
So this
would be like a November friendly, baby. And like every year for his birthday, you could just take him to like a friendly.
That's a good idea.
It's a good setup.
Hey, look, if you have ideas how I should raise my child in soccer, as always, the hot take hotline is open, 401-206-0-MLS.
My thing is, I want your child to be well-rounded, so I'm going to make sure three times a week he's watching either like CAF Champions League, watching Oceania like World Cup qualifying, or watching like Copa Libertadores, so he understands the game from all corners.
Yeah,
of the world.
For sure, I'm down. That's in.
Probably a lot of Canadian.
And that's great because you like babysit like Thursday nights with Uncle
for
Dave.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll do Copa Live weekly. I'll do the Copa Live weekly.
Let's do it. I'm in. You got to take CPR class first, just to let you know.
I have.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
you're
certified.
Set then. You're set then. Eastern Conference. Let's turn to that, and we're gonna start with NYCFC Columbus because that's the game that we haven't talked about. It's at 5 p.m. Eastern on Sunday on ESPN, TSN, and TVA Sports. Just before that, at 3, is Toronto FC hosting the Red Bulls. Let's start with NYCFC though. Second year in a row, get it put on them in the conference semis. 4-1 in Columbus, an absolute party for Crew SC. Congratulations to them. Anthony Precourt was at this game. There were some boos directed his ways, some chants. It's not entirely surprising given all the news that's happening, but they've built a good team there. They've built a team that hasn't lost in now, 12 games, I think? They got to fall flat on their faces at Yankee Stadium to not get through this thing.
At 3-1. It was still a series?
Yeah, because it was 3-0, and then David Villa gets that goal, and you're like, oh.
Why did David Villa get that goal?
What do you mean, why?
Because Jonathan Mensah tripped on his feet again.
Well.
Then not only is it 3-1.
This is not a 90-minute flawless thing for me.
But I'm saying
he had a pretty darn good game outside of that.
He made a lot of mistakes as well. Not only is it 3-1, but you're also looking at 3-1 against the team that starts Jonathan Mensah at center back. So you have a chance going into leg two. And that is when you come back to the last year, because you get a red card, you're man down, you're on the road, they have the energy, you gave up a fortunate goal for Columbus.
Sean John did not have a great game.
All of that, you're fine. Giving up the fourth, and the way they gave up the fourth, being so disorganized.
Oh, God, Harrison Offal, not even disorganized, just the effort and like that. If we're going to go back to Megan's friends defending, that's Megan's friends defending.
Oh, that's harsh. I play as a defender.
That
is the mental part that they didn't learn from last year, which is how to stop the bleeding and just take your lump and get out and survive for the next game.
I thought that was as soon as the red card happened. That should have come into effect.
I agree, and it didn't, and then they still got saved and had a second chance at it, and then they didn't. And if you're a fan of that team, that is what should be frustrating is, one, who's your leaders? It's not going to be Yangel Herrera. He's a young player. But in terms of Briant, in terms of Ring, and in terms of Villa up that spine, some of those guys.
Kayans as well. He played every single minute for you.
Kayans is off.
As I'm saying, you can't get that red card in this game. Did you have any doubt that it was a red card?
No.
I don't know how you would. This went to video review, of course. Kayans and Justin Miriam in the box on a corner kick, I believe it was. Look, he sizes him up. He looks at him, and then he sticks the elbow up and gets him, like, jaw, chin area. But to me, I mean, that's done and dusted. Yeah. You're off, and that is the worst time of the year to have a
– He hasn't missed a minute?
Not a minute.
So now he's going to be suspended.
Critical error.
Yeah.
This is, like, one of the big reasons why this team went from very, very questionable on the back line to, okay, yeah. This is the MLS Cup contending team.
I said that I still didn't trust this back line.
Okay.
I was lambasted for
that. You're right.
Yeah. Now it all worked out. I saw some people on Twitter who are better goalkeeping experts than me talking about Sean Johnson's feet and his inability to use his feet correctly to get out of the way and get in front of those shots, because two of those shots were right on him. One of them, he comes down low and doesn't get there in time. The other one, he spills right in front of himself and Ola Kamara puts in. Justin Mira missed an open goal as well in this game. So, like, there was a lot of opportunities. Now let's look at the other side. NYCFC had a ton of chances.
They did.
In this game. One, because Columbus refused to keep possession and decided that they were going to give the ball over in terrible spots multiple times in the first half. NYCFC didn't take advantage. Villa hits the post. Another one or two decent looks that they're not able to use. And then Mensa makes the mistake for the goal. This game should have been 5-3 probably in the end, and it wasn't. And that wasn't down to them being elite attacking teams. It was down to both of them making mistakes defensively.
Pedro Santos, I think, and I've kind of harped on him over the course of this season as after he came in the summer, of like, where's the final product for him? I think he's finally either finally settling in or figuring out what his role is or figuring out where he can be most effective. You're starting to see that from him. You're starting to see chance creation. You're starting to see him pop up in dangerous spots and unbalance people. He's not necessarily a guy who's just going to run by you all the time, but it's kind of the little like burst of pace at the right moments that get him there, and the passes are starting to find the feet, and he's getting in positions to shoot. He's a guy, and you have that front four, and we like to talk about the front four in Toronto and, of course, for NYCFC as well, although that's kind of faded away as the season's gone on, and Harrison and Rodney Wallace and those guys, the goals have dried up.
I thought that was a weird sub, by the way.
Which one?
To take off Rodney Wallace, the guy who normally works the hardest and can play multiple positions, as your sub in a reaction to the red card to bring on Matarita and slide Sweat in as a center back. I just didn't think you had to make that sub there. Just pull Rodney Wallace back and play him at left back. I just thought that was a little bit weird. Maybe he wasn't fit or something's wrong.
Is there any – you know, we talked about on MLS Playoff Central David Villa's legacy in MLS and Patrick Vieira's legacy in MLS, and I add the words in MLS repeatedly because
sure.
People, you know, as always, only read headlines and got really confused about what it is we were talking about. You can't question either of them in their careers in total, in their careers with their national teams, with – clubs.
Well, one's a coach, one's a player.
Sure.
That part's
sure,
different.
But, well, Patrick Vieira also, yeah. Right.
David Villa's legacy is safe because he...
In MLS, though.
Yeah, because he scored back-to-back 20 goal seasons. He carried
despite the fact that he is the leader of this team and they may get smoked out two straight years
in the playoffs. He carried
the
team the first year. Listen, Henri's legacy is safe. I guess they won a supporter shield, but they didn't go to an MLS Cup.
No, true. But I think that's part of his legacy, is that he wasn't able to lead them to the promised land, that he wasn't even able to get there.
Like, maybe.
I think there's no doubt that's part of his legacy. When you compare him to a Robbie Keane, like one of the first things you think is
Robbie Keane had a better MLS career than Thierry
Henry. Sure. And
Robbie Keane had a better MLS career than David Villa.
And the reason is he lifted cups.
Yeah, he also did it for longer in this league. That might be true, but that doesn't change the fact that David Villa is going to have a great legacy in his MLS career. That exists.
But it's a matter of degrees.
It might be me watching these teams right now and saying they're not great teams. They're not elite, all-time great teams. And so it's not like they should be winning and faltering. And I'm saying, well, he didn't show up in the big game and they underperformed. So that might be my reaction to it. For Patrick Vieira, there's a huge question marks. Can he coach a team through a big moment? Can he get his team to understand how to react to moments? And this is something we talked about with the U.S. national team, which is young players or players not experiencing tough situations, knowing how to coach themselves on the field, not being told, not having an exact game plan, and being able to react to situations and figure them out. They couldn't do it last year. We talked about it all of this year, that they were a little bit more solid in the back, that they were less dogmatic offensively, that they tried to play out of the back a little bit less, and that they had quality on their team. He'd went out and got better central midfielders to help assist that back line, better center backs. But then they do it all again. And so now it reaches a point where it doesn't matter what happens next year. The whole time with NYCFC, Patrick Vieira comes back and it's the same team, you're going to say, talk to me in October.
Right. Which is what you say about the Red Bulls as well.
Exactly.
On Crew SC's side, I think they got to be feeling pretty good about this.
That fourth goal obviously changed everything.
Yeah.
And they weren't as efficient as they could have been with chances. But I love Ola Kamara. I love Justin Miram. And Higuain is in form. And that was the question mark the whole time, was is this a guy at this age that can still be in form? And he's in form at the right time. It doesn't matter if he plays 10 good games. If it's the last 10 games of the year, that's all you need.
Artur got his first ever professional goal, so congratulations to him. He continues to look pretty good, although he did have, you mentioned those bad giveaways.
Yeah.
A couple moments where it's like, ooh, you lucked out, man, because if that changes a little bit, we're not talking about your positive moment. We're talking about how you gave some of this away and the road goals killed you. So Crew SC kind of played with fire there, but in the end it didn't matter. 4-1, an absolute party at Matt Free Stadium. Congratulations to Crew SC fans rolling on. You assume probably to the conference finals. Though we will see. You can watch this game, of course, on Sunday.
If NYCFC wins, is that like the biggest? I think three goals down was the biggest in one game.
So they'd have to. So here's the scenarios for you for Sunday, and they play at 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and TSN and TVA Sports. They'd have to win 3-0 So then you got 4-4 on aggregate. They have the away goal and or better.
Yeah.
So, but once Columbus, if they can get away goals, now all of a sudden that whole thing gets really complicated. Yeah. So for NYCFC, they got to be pitching a shutout, and they got to do it without Kyens, and they got to score a bunch of goals, which can happen at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, it was surprising, though. He didn't start Struna. He didn't start Matarita, which I thought was really surprising. I would expect they both start now in the second leg. They both came off the bench. You're going to probably start a similar team. Maybe you go McNamara to get a little bit more offense on that wing. And then at some point in this game, if you're down, you got to slide to a three-man back line and just push numbers forward. So whether that's Ring falling in and you push numbers forward, or you take one of Ring and Herrera off the field.
Sean Okolie in this game, I mean, I know this is an issue for them. They just don't have that difference maker coming off the bench. Yeah. And Kerry Shelton was that for them at times last year, and it's not there right now. Toronto FC and New York Red Bull start the day off on Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, TVA Sports, and TSN. Toronto FC, of course, went to Red Bull Arena and won 2-1 in front of the Boo Birds, who really gave it to Josie Altidore and Michael Bradley. We were talking last night in the office, and some of us were saying, you know, myself included, I was like, you know, I think by next year fans will be over this. I'm not so convinced about that anymore, because as the World Cup comes, the draw comes, every stadium's going to feel like, oh, this is our shot. I'm not sure that this is over. No. So there's a long time to go on that storyline. We'll leave that for different days, because that's certainly not going to happen at home.
Also, I would love to hear what other fans who haven't been in or have been in those stadiums think about this. Because this isn't us. This is fans. This is supporters. So email us, text us.
401-206-0MLS. Let's talk about the matchup here. Red Bulls are going to have to come out and push. Toronto FC, I think, can create goals and have proven they can create goals with three folks in the attacking third.
One of them
might
not be healthy.
With Sebastian Jovinko not at his very, very best. Yes, that is the question mark here. Drew Moore, questionable. Also, Victor Vasquez, questionable, who was best 11 for me and I think many others. I'd be shocked if he wasn't on that team this year. Just an absolute beast. Scored the opening goal in this series. If they don't have these two players, is that... That's certainly not a fatal issue for Toronto FC, especially given the two away goals, especially given the lead that they already have. But it does affect the way that they play.
It also cracks the door, I think, for Red Bulls. If you see that lineup, if you're Red Bulls, and you see Nick Hagelin in there at center back, and you don't see Victor Vasquez, so you probably see Jonathan Osorio, maybe Armando Cooper instead, you think you have a chance, because neither of those players in midfield are as creative and dangerous as Vasquez. And Nick Hagelin isn't the organizer that Drew Moore is, and he's not the veteran that Drew Moore is. And I know he's been out for a while, so that also hurts, is that he's not in form. He hasn't played a lot of games.
Maybe the rhythm isn't quite there.
If you're New York, now all of a sudden you put everything right on Hagelin. You push Bradley Wright Phillips right on top of him, and you start playing balls into his feet consistently, and you get Sasha and you get Royer running off Wright Phillips, and I think you start Verone. You won't know their lineup, but I think you're starting Verone anyway, and you've got Verone running off of them, and now all of a sudden you drive all of your pressure directly at him and Mavinga, and you try and make them control situations, because the thing about the five-man backline is Moore can just move things like a chessboard. He doesn't actually physically have to really defend that often.
No.
Because he lets it all happen in front of him, and he works pieces.
Hey, he just cleans it up.
Yeah.
Hey, come in here.
Yeah.
Shift, rotate, pressure.
Hagelin doesn't have that same ability. He's not the same player. And so now I think there's an opportunity to at least force mistakes along that backline and try and score a goal.
I think you're spot on, though, with playing into feet for Bradley Wright Phillips, because that's the one area that Hagelin can dominate you, is in the air. If you put it in the air and just let him go seek it out, and you have those three center backs back there, that's not going to work for the Red Bulls. They can't be the Seattle Sounders where it's just cross, 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 cross in the air. Now, I think if you can get him behind with Tyler Adams and maybe with Kamar Lawrence.
Kamar Lawrence needs to wake up.
Play those balls along
the
ground.
He was asleep in the
You have a
leg.
Chance. No, yeah. I agree. And a lot of this team was asleep. Yeah. Jesse Marsh came out and ripped them, and you know, for good reason. But Kamar Lawrence is, I think, in the conversation, top three best left backs in this league.
Yeah, I agree.
Play like it. Because this is the time when they need you, man. And I know it's been kind of up and down in Red Bull's colors for you, and you've had injuries, and you've also had all that interest after the Gold Cup when you played, or Copa Centenario, excuse me, or Copa America the year before that. Anyway, there was a bunch of interest, and he didn't get the move. This is the time, man. Go prove it. This is the big stage.
I think this formation hurts him. There's just less room for him to run in, and he wants to get one-on-one. And he's pushed higher up the field, but he likes to pick the ball up and then run at his defender rather than receive it in that final third. So this, I don't think this is ideal for him, and he's not a guy that's going to play in that left or right center back spot. So he has to play out there at left back. So I don't know that it maximizes him. And I asked the question, if you're going to start Verón, do you not go 4-4-2? I know it's a drastic change late in the season, but put, I think, a few more guys in a more comfortable spot. Put Murillo at right back. Slide Tyler Adams up into right midfield. He's not maybe a game changer there, but he'll do a job for you. Royer on the left.
And maybe he's closer to pressure.
Yeah.
Maybe he's in a position to really, like, get in behind Morrow, keep Morrow from pushing in, and take advantage if they do turn the ball over.
So it would be maybe too drastic at what it stands at 2-1. But at some point, you need to change something, and you need to do something. And the worry for me is if you go out there in the five-man backline and you wait 35, 45 minutes, 55 minutes, at that point, is it just too late?
Yeah. And will Toronto FC have gotten two already because Josie and
Javinko
and Michael hitting those big diagonals?
Bradley's going to have another big game.
He was huge tonight.
He was amazing in the first leg, but because of Moore's absence, he's going to have to be the one understanding what's going on behind him, helping direct that.
Sunday, that's when it all goes down. 3 p.m., 5 p.m., 7:30 p.m., Toronto, Red Bulls, NYCFC, Columbus, Portland, Houston, ESPN, ESPN, FS1, and in Canada, TSN and TVA Sports. This is going to be a fun day. We've been waiting for one of these days where it's just like, hey, all on the line, conference finals in the balance, let's get down. These are basically elimination games. Come watch this. Hang out at MLS Playoff Central. We're going to go to break on the other side. Hot Take Hotline time.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Remember, all the games go down Sunday. The second legs, the final three of the conference semifinals. It starts at 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Toronto hosting the Red Bulls. Rolls on through the day. NYCFC and Columbus at 5, also on ESPN. Then 7:30, you've got on FS1, the Western Conference game that will see who faces the Seattle Sounders. Portland or the Houston Dynamo. MLS Playoff Central is there to bring you your pregame and postgame reaction as well as interviews on site. Let's get into the mailbag, Dave. I expect we have a lot. 401-206-0MLS. Call or text. Can I take a guess? Is there something from RSL fans in there about Jefferson Savarino?
No.
No?
No.
No?
And nothing from people from Detroit either.
What? I'm shocked. Jefferson Savarino, by the way, is now a permanent member of Real Salt Lake. A great signing for them. If you look at their roster, they've got a young Slovakian international in Rusnak. They've got a young Venezuelan international in Jefferson Savarino. They've got a young Ecuadorian international, maybe entering his prime, you could say, in Joao Plata. They've re-upped Mike Pecky. They got to figure out what's going to go down with Beckerman and Raimondo, but they're trending upward. And when we talk about the Whitecaps and what they'll be next year, that's why I'm like, look, the Western Conference had a down year. Don't bet on that being down again.
Well, there's no way LA is going to be as bad as they were.
No, it's almost impossible.
Right.
Yeah. And so Dallas, who knows? They're a complete wild card, but like it could flip for them. You saw the photos, right? You saw the big news? In hair? In less hair? Kyle Beckerman?
Yeah, I like
tweeted
it.
Cut his dreads off. What?
Yeah, I was like breaking news on that. No, it wasn't. No, Maddie Lee broke that news.
Well played. And that's incredible. Not incredible. That is MLS news. Like, that is an actual news item.
Yeah.
What do you think? Are you like, it kind of freaked me out. I mean, you always were able to pick him out on the field at any given time.
I like it more than the Pablo Mascherini mustache. So in terms of that Rocky Mountain Cup rivalry.
Oh, okay. Then you're going to go there, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let's roll on. What do we got?
Detroit.
Yeah.
Some
crazy. So it looks
stuff
like the Ford family is been added to the bid, and that likely that Ford Field would be the spot for this team should they be granted an expansion franchise. Not entirely surprising. I know that look, we've talked for a lot of years, and there's kind of been this dogmatic way that it's been thought about. You need a soccer-specific stadium. But then you've got, like, NYCFC doesn't have one. Neither does Atlanta United. And when Atlanta United's Seattle, of course, packing in 70,000 people, you know, it starts to become compelling. So we'll see what happens here. I can't give you any insight into this other than this is a very interesting development, and it's going to be worth watching what happens with the expansion bids that come through by the end of this year. Two more expected by the end of 2017, and then, of course, two more at some point. So watch, pay attention, you know, actions.
It's November.
Yeah, it is. It's
so
crazy.
Those two are happening in six weeks.
Big news coming. Yeah. Actions speak louder than words, of course. So we'll see who gets the bids and how they're reacted to, but that's the big news.
From caller unknown in parts unknown, do you think any of the Western Conference teams have what it takes to go up against Toronto or other teams in the Eastern Conference? I'd like to amend this question.
Yeah, okay.
By also
it was
adding,
anonymous in every way, so I think we have that
by
right.
By also adding, do you think that they could Western Conference team could do it in two legs?
I think if it's anybody but Toronto FC, there's a chance.
And in one leg
and I think Seattle have a chance in one leg on the road because of their back line and because they have, you know, real difference makers in Clint Dempsey and Nico Ladero. And we talk about them being a little bit individualistic and yada, yada, yada. But, like, in a championship game, that's okay. They won without getting a shot on goal last year. So it can happen. I think Portland's too banged up. I think Houston's just too early in their evolution as a team to be able to seriously contend and challenge Toronto in that occasion on the road in the cold. The other teams are, I think, up for grabs in that sense. But Toronto are the best team in this league. I think they're the best team of all time. I think with Victor Vasquez at home in a game they lost last year and will remember very vividly, they're not going to lose. So if they get MLS Cup, it's my full expectation that they'll win it.
What if Albert Elise?
No, don't
scored
even.
The
don't
game
just
winner
I mean,
on the road in Toronto.
Don't even.
MLS Cup. Councilhood on Twitter. Western Conference playoffs look like college soccer from 1980s. All power and push. It sucks.
What do you think
about the Western Conference?
Yeah,
I think it's played out exactly how I thought it was, which is these are lower quality teams.
Yep.
And what the conversation I was having with Nick Rosano last night while we were watching the Seattle game with a bartender who had gone on a road trip and been to an MLS game in Seattle, Vancouver, and Portland.
Nice. Where was this?
Convenient. In Brooklyn, obviously.
Yes.
Convenient because then he was super willing to put on the game. Was that, and I think we talked about it on the show, if Vancouver had done what they did against Toronto in two legs, they would have gotten beat.
Yeah.
And if they did the same against NYCFC or Columbus or Atlanta, maybe even New York, I think they'd gotten beat. And so I think the lack of top-end quality in the Western Conference has let teams think, rather than, well, we got to try and find a way to win this, let's not lose this.
Right, because the Red Bulls had to come out and try to win at home.
Right.
They didn't have a choice.
They could not have played like Vancouver in the first leg and survived against Toronto.
And it may have been a crippling blow for them to lose, but it wasn't like going back to – it wasn't like they were going to hold them 0-0, first of all.
Right.
And so then you have to go for it a little bit, and you have to at least willing to take a chance. I think you're right. I think it's about top-end talent, and we've seen throughout this year, you know, people email us, text us, call us all the time, hey, you know, let's make a drinking game out of this East is better than West talk. We do it for a reason. The East is just better than the West.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun when that whole thing comes back around. What's up, boys? Bill Carroll, Section 132, legend. How do you feel about the Dax trade now? Last week it was justified with the Red Bull win over Chicago. This week it was discredited with Sasha's horrible game, then putting the blame on our 21-year-old player, Maria. The way Sasha was talking after the game, you would have thought he was a U.S. national team player who all seemed to be pointing the finger at everyone else except themselves. And by the way, our young players will get the U.S. back on track, and so will our young players get the Red Bulls back on track. Talking Tyler Adams. Red Bull 3-1 win. My bracket's still going strong.
3-1, that's a strong prediction from Bill Carroll. He is a hashtag legend. But I was shocked, honestly, by the way that Murillo got backed under the bus. Like, to me, that's a situation as a team to say, you got an out. You have an easy out. Sebastian Giovinco bangs in free kicks. Yeah. But you know what? We had a tactic for it. We thought it might work. The timing wasn't right. You know, we did the best we could. He almost got to it. This is a guy that has to play in Murillo. Like, lights out at BMO Field for them to have any chance at all. Any chance. Not even a glimmer of a chance. Like, any. And to come and just kind of, like, back over him and be like, yeah, it's on him. He's got to do this. You know, maybe you do that behind closed doors, and that's fine. That's a little bit different to me. But to say it publicly, just kind of ignores the fact this whole team was flat. That it's not like they didn't lose because Mourinho didn't get back on a free kick. They lost because they didn't perform, and this was not a great, like, point A to point B, minute one to minute nine performance from Red Bull. So
now, if anyone's going to do it, it's Sasha's role because he's the leader
sure,
of this
sure.
team. Right?
For sure. But why? What's the point? Like, what's the
– I don't know.
What do you get? What's the – what do you accomplish? I'm not sure what that – what the goal was.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. When you look at the Western Conference – Ben in Portland, Vancouver need a midfield maestro like Valerio Lodeiro to hit the next level. Bolaños consistently killed attack with his bad passes. I think that's a little bit of what we talked about. This one's interesting. Whitecaps are on deck for what happened to Colorado this year. Massive regression, even goal differential. Outperformed their expected goals by 6 goals this year. And then in parentheses, because you were on with Alan Gordon last night, he said, tell Alamo I'm sorry if he takes offense to my take.
Nah, he didn't. We mostly played that up. But look, I think that they're in for a regression in the sense that if they keep Freddie Montero and they don't make improvements, they'll be basically the same team they were, which is unable to dictate play with possession, reliant on the counterattack, reliant on a moment or two of brilliance from Montero, and hoping to get set pieces. And to me, next year in the Western Conference, that team is probably a 5 or 6 team at best.
Now, you would think Nowinski will improve.
Nerwinski
will
improve.
Gazal
will
be in this league
a little bit longer. I like Gazal. I actually think Gazal's a good player. He does a job in the sense that he just sits in. He cleans up, wins the ball, and puts it on other players' foot in good spots. He's
puts
strong.
Puts people in headlocks.
He also puts people in headlocks. And I think Chani was a good trade for them. But Mesquita, Bolaños, Shea, even Teixeira. Like, if these are your wingers, and these, like Alphonso Davies at 17, despite his promise, if those are the players you're relying on outside of Freddie and maybe not Freddie and Jordi Reyna, you're in trouble from an attacking standpoint. You're not going to create chances. You're not going to trouble teams. The longer you go on playing that exact same style, the more people will figure you out and know how to, like, counter that. No pun intended right there. But I just think they're one track right now, and that is not sustainable long term. They've got to find a way to create chances in a different way, and to do that, they got to get quality. So if you don't improve, a good chance you miss the playoffs again next year.
Heading back to the East, MLS Fantasy Boss. I think you guys cursed Johnson by talking him up on Extra Time Radio recently. Hashtag Columbus versus NYC.
I don't think the ETR curse is real anymore.
I don't think that I talked him up. I thought he was a worry for me, and I didn't think it would be shot-stopping like it was. I thought it was more going to be his play off the line and maybe playing out the back a little bit. So I was surprised to see that. Josh Lafferty, Crew SC fan. Thanks for your support. Bittersweet today. Hashtag Crew SC wins. Yet I'm nauseous about a possible move to Austin. Hashtag MLS Cup playoffs. Hashtag save the crew.
Congrats on that atmosphere, by the way.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You know, the number that threw out there was, you know, I think like 14.5.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever it is, I don't know what it is. I don't do the logistics here where I count the people coming in or the ticket sales. But I do know that the crowd and on TV, and I'm sure in person, it felt like a big occasion, and it felt like they were behind their team. It helps when you go out and whack somebody 4-1.
Yeah, but you could feel the energy.
Right,
you could feel the building.
But I like that. It was a great game.
And you always kind of Crew Stadium.
Mapfre Stadium,
yeah. Sorry. When it feels that way. Christian from San Diego. Columbus has an amazing player in Pedro Santos. Excited to see his growth in this league. On the flip side, RTD's Novi Me Crew fan. I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Why so high on Arter? How many times did he turn it over? Bad pass, turned around. Santos and others had to cover. The sloppiness will kill them when they go on to the next round.
Yeah, look, I think that was not a there's not a flawless game from him. And I think he, more so than the other options they have in that midfield, provides a little bit of balance between like playing the ball forward and pushing forward and putting pressure on folks and just dumb giveaways. I think Moabu tends toward the giveaway side, and I'm not sure brings enough for you the other way. I just feel like Arthur bridges that gap a little bit. Let Will Trapp be the guy that sits back in, helps him cover when needed, but also can push up into that space in front of him and find Pipa and also make a run. But he had some bad giveaways.
Yeah, he had a bad game.
And even with the goal, and those bad giveaways in this second leg, those are the things you cannot have. Like, you kick it out of bounds.
Yeah.
Eschew your whole, like, build-up possession style if you have to. If you get in a tough spot, get the ball out of there, because on that Yankee Stadium field, point A to point B can happen really, really quickly, and David Villa can pick up 2, and all of a sudden you can get nervous.
This one from an anonymous person. Can we stop saying nil-nil when no one scores? For a show constantly fighting back against Euro snob MLS haters, we are to use a British term for 0-0.
Was this anonymous?
I don't know who sent it.
Oh, okay.
Who do you think sent it?
I'm pretty sure Ben Bear sent
it. You think Ben Bear
sent
it?
Yeah, I think that's a research bear take. And maybe he
you
was
think
just,
Ben's
maybe
that
he was
spineless?
I don't know, maybe he was just cribbing the line.
Maybe you think Ben
think he's just maybe he's been doing this for a while. He's just sneaking stuff in the hot take hotline anonymously.
You think Ben's not brave enough to come?
I don't know what Ben is or isn't. Maybe he's at the bar and like, hey, can I borrow your phone real quick? Just got to send a text.
Send
don't worry
for
about
random
it.
People's phones. So Seattle Sounders are in the Western Conference Finals. Uh-huh. We've got three games coming up on Sunday. Can we get some predictions from you?
Yes.
Portland, Houston. We're going backwards in time.
Portland, Houston.
It's tough.
I know.
And it's
with Chara, I would not even have a doubt. I would go 2-1 Portland all day, every day. And
with Chara,
with
Nagby,
with
a few of them.
Yeah. I think even without Blanco, I'd be fine going Portland wins. I think I'm going to go 2-2.
Yeah, I think there's a decent chance there's a goal-scoring tie, and Houston goes through on that tie.
Yeah, I think it's 2-2, and Houston moves on.
I worry about Houston trying to hold on late. If they have that scenario, I think I've seen mistakes from them
holding
scenarios.
On any scenario should be worrying. So, but I just think that it'll open up. Both teams will get desperate because I think goals will come at some point. And
yeah, I hope so.
Then it's got to go.
I'm going to say 1-1. So Houston goes through as well. Wow, Houston in the Western Conference Finals.
Whoa.
I picked Portland to go to MLS Cup.
I did too.
So that was a bad pick.
That was before the injuries.
Yes, of course. Then Toronto, New York.
Toronto's moving on. I'm going to have a 3-1 win for them.
And Columbus, NYCFC.
I think Columbus NYCFC is probably like a 2-1 NYCFC win,
and then it
doesn't matter because of the 4-1 win in the aggregate. So then you have Columbus, Toronto, which is I think a great like chock full of storylines. Trillium Cup, baby!
Wasn't that? Nope. That was Columbus Montreal when Kai scored that crazy goal 2-3 years ago. Yeah.
Don't devalue the Trillium Cup.
No, I was
ignore that age-old rivalry.
I was saying that they've done this before, but they haven't.
For decades, they have battled for Trillium.
Which is a flower.
Is it?
Isn't it?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's a flower.
I always assumed it was a made-up metal.
No, it's the flower.
I assumed it was like some made-up thing.
Yeah, so Trillium is a flower, and I'm pretty sure it's the state flower of Ohio and also like of whatever Toronto is.
Gotcha.
And so that's why
Ontario,
they play for it.
Yeah,
but I don't know if it's the city or the province.
Oh, okay. On the other side, then we would have presumably
Houston, Seattle,
and
Dempsey never scores against Houston. I think. I don't know if that's true, but I have a thing in my head where that's a thing.
Yeah, it's 100%.
So at least for MLS MVP,
right, Ben Bear takes.
Yeah, Houston wins MLS Cup. Okay. Elise wins MLS MVP in his first year.
It all comes for us full circle. We all wear Pantera masks.
The international
preseason
break then takes on a different effect on the MLS playoffs if Houston gets through, because you've got Kyoto,
Roma, they got the playoff there,
right? You have to
and
go
that's
to
a significant
Australia.
Amount of travel.
They're very fortunate that they get the first leg at home.
Hey, look, watch the playoffs. We'll be back on Monday to wrap it all up. It'll be a really fun time. Starts at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. 2:30 p.m. is MLS Playoff Central, so tune in for that one for the pregame show. Then at 3, Toronto Red Bulls on ESPN, TSN, and TVA Sports. 5 o'clock, you keep it rolling out in the Eastern Conference, New York City FC and Columbus Crew SC. And then at 7:30 p.m. on FS1, TSN, and TVA Sports, you got the Western Conference. Who will join the Seattle Sounders in the conference finals out there? Portland or Houston? Let us know what you think, 401-206-0-MLS. Enjoy the action, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.